Succession number 22344, Reel 10.
Major Grace, Reel 10. I think you said you were sent back to the Padiglione Woods.
That's right, yes. So we were able to spend a whole night in the woods. In theory, we were resting, but in fact, we had the Luftwaffe came over, and we had quite a lot of bombing, both from stray artillery shells and from the Luftwaffe. And unfortunately, one bomb, I think, from the air landed just beside a slit trench where the signals officer, Jimmy Leckie, was, and killed him immediately. And he was my best friend. And the other one who was equally killed by the same bomb was the intelligence officer, Jimmy Methvin. And he was very seriously injured and had to be taken away. And he did survive the war, but he never really got over his wounds, as we discovered later years.
But were you dug in that wilderness?
We just had to dig just enough shallow trenches just to spend the night in. It wasn't meant to be a defensive position. It was just to protect us as far as possible from shrapnel and bombs and things.
These are shelter trenches.
Yes.
Well, not fighting.
That's right. But we were supposed to be given a period of rest after all we'd been through, but all we got was that night and up till about midday the next morning, and then we were told the main German offensive to drive us all into the sea is going to start very soon, so come forward. So once again we had to march forward. And we went in the direction of Rome, and we had to take our position in what became known as the Caves. And the Caves was quite another little battle on its own, but fortunately we didn't stay there very long. It became mainly a centre of... Well, it's an epic tale concerning both our own troops and the Americans, so I can't possibly go into it now except to say that when we went into these caves, it was quite a lugubrious effect. And as Major Bridgman said, "Welcome to our new home, Caves. We can get some idea now of what the early Christians must have felt like." It was very eerie indeed, and it was also a resting place for a number of injured people, and so we were there in a defensive position
inside a cave,
but we only stayed there a short time because we didn't have to actually fight any battles from there, because we were relieved. Get who by now, by the Americans mainly, I think it was, because we were told we had to go further up towards Rome to bolster the defence against this expected German offence. And so we took up the usual defensive position, and that night we were attacked by a German fighting patrol. Or I should have said that by now our platoon, I think the whole company in fact, had been reinforced by a lot of newcomers. They just arrived on the beachhead the night before, so they were absolutely raw and battle trained, but they were very willing. And of course we had to give them a welcome and try and put them in the picture. And they were very, a different sort of troops. We naturally, who had been through so much, had a lot to tell them. And however, We were almost up to strength now, so...
Is your platoon was up to strength?
Yeah, well, the whole company was up to strength. There were a lot of troops from South Africa, mm-hmm. and they were the ones who reinforced our battalion. Mm. I didn't really see much of them, except the few that were implementing my own platoon, that's all.
So you got some South Africans. Did they have any connection with the Gordon Highlanders?
Yes, they had. I forget what it was now, but there were a lot of Scottish South Africans. Mm. Don't ask me the history of who they were or how they got there, but I know that there was a definite connection, yes.
And you're saying they had no battle experience, these?
No, well, not at that moment, no.
What about their military skills? Had they been well trained?
Oh, I think so. As it turned out, later on, of course, as the fighting went on and went through Rome and went up into the north of Italy, I believe the story is that they acquitted themselves splendidly. Ah, yes.
So they joined you?
Yes.
Did they join you when you were in the wood?
They joined us when we were in these defensive positions facing Rome.
What was the ground like there and the positions you occupied? Was it on a flat plane?
We're on a slight rise, yes. So we had the advantage that, yes. at any rate during daylight, we could look across the plain and see what was happening. And also, the next night, I presume, if I remember rightly, the moon must have risen where it hadn't been before. And so when this fighting patrol came, we were able to see them coming in the moonlight, mm-hmm. and we were able to give them the usual reception of the last-minute burst. And although some of their machine guns caused a few casualties, we certainly gave them more than they reckoned for, and they withdrew. And I think all I can remember now is that we were expecting any moment that the main German assault, and there was a tremendous artillery battle going on, and this was another chapter all on its own. The colossal firepower from our own artillery, which absolutely decimated the German advance, but they threw so many men in that they were absolutely determined, and Hitler, as you know, made it his personal endeavour that, above all, we must have a great victory here and drive the British out, and the Americans out of the beachhead and drown them in the sea. And equally, of course, it was a battle on Churchill's behalf, because he also was desperate to have a victory. However, that said... the last thing I have to say is that during the day we were ready for them as far as we could be, and we were assaulted next by an attack of Messerschmitts coming over and strafing us. And as I was more or less half expecting the infantry to come behind, someone shouted, very loud shout, and then I realised it was myself. And I looked down and I saw that my left leg was bleeding right up at the top of the thigh. And so that's the end of my story.
What had happened? Had you been caught by a Messerschmitt?
Yes. In fact, I've still got the bullet that was cut out of my leg eventually.
What sort of height were they on this strafing attack?
Very, very close. Very, very low down indeed. Yes, we could almost see. If he'd been visible, we could have seen the face of the pilot as close as that.
How many of them were there?
I think about nine. What do you call a flotilla? What do you call?
Squadron?
Squadron, yeah.
Did they come in line ahead, or did they come line abreast?
Line abreast, I think line abreast. It was, yes.
So it sounds like a general strafing attack along
yeah,
the
yes,
British
that's right, general yeah. strafing. Yeah. Probably there were other men wounded by the same at the same time as I was, but I wasn't really aware of what else was going on. I was taken back to the RAP on a stretcher, which was very uncomfortable ride because the RAP was at least a mile behind, and that's really the end of my story.
What happened to you at the RAP?
Well, I was put my stretcher was put at the bottom of a slit trench, and the RAP itself was under artillery fire, and shells were landing all round, and what landed on top of me was not a shell, but a medical orderly who jumped into my slit trench to take shelter, and him jumping on top of my leg didn't help it at all. Anyway, eventually I was given a preliminary operation, and fortunately the very next day there was an LST, I think, leaving Anzio for Naples, by sea, of course. And I was lucky enough to be put on the ship, on deck, on a stretcher. And from there, I had a marvellous view of this great Vesuvius eruption that was taking place at this time. And so I, although I was very much in pain and rather unaware of what was going on, this was so unusual that I was able to get a very good view of it all.
So I had to ask you whether you've been given any treatment for pain relief? And
No, I was bleeding a great deal, and they kept putting great wads of cotton wool on to absorb the blood.
Mm.
And I was so desperately thirsty, of course, naturally losing so much. And I kept calling out, water, water. And once I was on the ship, I think the blood had more or less stopped bleeding. But I think it was touch and go. I lost so much blood. I think they gave me a transfusion. And I was looked after by a very pretty American nurse who was there. And however, eventually I landed up in a hospital in Naples, and there they cut the bullet out of my leg. And after a short while, can't remember how long now, I landed up in a hospital in Catania. And I was in Catania in this same hospital for 3 months because the wound wouldn't heal up. The sciatic nerve had been slightly nicked, so it was very painful all the time. It would never let up. And after 3 months, because there was still a lot of pus and matter in the leg, the doctor decided that I should go home, so I went home in a hospital ship.
Back to England. Mm.
And I landed up eventually in Birmingham, and Birmingham Hospital, military hospital in Birmingham. And I remember how marvellous it was. I could, going by train, still on my stretcher, to see the greenery of the English countryside, because after the sodden mud of Italy and of course the barren drought of North Africa, it was wonderful to see the English green.
How long did it take you to recover from the wound?
I think it was 6 months after I was wounded that I rejoined a Scottish battalion near Annan, which was a training battalion sending jocks out to the Far East. And it was called the 9th Seaforth. And in fact, it was a medley of Scottish regiment. There were Gordons and Camerons and Seaforth all muddled up together for on training purposes only.
What was your work there?
Well, I started by being intelligence officer, which meant that I didn't have to do anything at all. And I was still on two sticks, so I just hobbled around a bit. And then very quickly I got my strength back. Mm. I went to a hospital in Edinburgh for Faraday treatment to improve my leg muscles. And after a bit I became the adjutant. And after being adjutant for, it was about 6 months, I took over A Company. I was A Company commander for the rest of the war.
Tell me about the role of adjutant. Was this primarily concerned with discipline, or was it concerned with other things?
No, it was very much, it was like any other battalion, because although we were training and not fighting, I mean, we did behave exactly as any fighting unit would. The discipline was the same. After all, we had to train the jocks on what discipline was. We had the pipe band playing retreat. And incidentally, I've never yet mentioned the important function of our pipers. Did I say that? If I may go back to Africa then for a moment, because it wasn't so much in Italy, I should stress the importance of the pipe band, and in particular just a single piper. We in Africa we did some very, very long, arduous route marches, and to have a piper, one piper per company, was a marvellous thing. You could really almost add an extra 10 miles to your exhaustive marching if you had a piper in front of you.
Just provide you with distraction.
And so anyway, in this battalion in Scotland, as you can well imagine, we had a very efficient and excellent pipe band, and we beat retreat, and we gave all kinds of occasions, and we went on route marches to train the jocks, and we always had a piper in front of that.
Were the jocks generally well behaved? Was the discipline
good? Yes, they were. One thing again, before I leave the battlefield, I don't think I've really stressed yet, as I must do, this is very important, don't forget it, how marvellous my own troops were. Sergeant McLaren, who was my platoon sergeant from start to finish, he was absolutely wonderful, very dependable. And then the three section commanders, Tripney, Boyce and Allardyce in particular, they were with me all through Africa. Allardyce had been wounded once and come back again, and I think the others had survived me at any rate until I got wounded. I think I was the first of our foursome, shall we say, fivesome, to go. But the chaps who lasted throughout both campaigns, they really were fine soldiers. Although they were just from ordinary civvy life before they first joined up, they entered into the spirit of it, and they were always cheerful and good and excellent soldiers. And I can't commend them highly enough.
When you were commanding your company in the training battalion, was the training you were doing different in any way from what you had done when you had done your training? Have there been changes?
Well, basically, of course, it was the same. Weapon training was absolutely a priority. Keeping your rifle spotlessly clean, getting to know your other weapons, your Bren guns, that was all exactly the same. Discipline was exactly the same. And the regimental spirit was very high, and the influence of the Scottish officers and the pipes and the and so on, and also of the various troops. There were a number of officers who, like me, had been wounded and who were partly recovering and partly not quite up to strength. Now, and then, of course, there were the tactical training.
Had that changed at all?
That had changed in as much as it was mainly related to the Far East. And, of course, I knew nothing about this, but there were officers there who were expert in jungle warfare and the sort of warfare that the jocks would expect when they get to wherever they were going. We didn't know where they were going.
Presumably to Burma.
Yes, must have been Burma. Yeah. But I think even so, even allowing for the fact that jungle warfare and fighting against the Japs in particular had their particular slant, shall we say, and emphasis, I think the actual basic training was not much different from... We had chutes and we had sand tables and all that sort of thing, because as well as the jocks, we were training young subalterns as well.
How long did the training last? How long would a soldier spend in the battalion?
Yes, I know. I think, well, I know that roughly about every fortnight we sent a cadre off.
And they were coming in, obviously, rolling through.
Rolling through. So roughly they went out in layers once a fortnight. Quite help, because we had to go and see them off at Annan Station. But how long? I think about 3 months.
What happened then at the end of the war? Did you think of carrying on in the army as a...
I had thought of it, to tell you the truth, yes. I'd even thought of joining the control commission in German, because as I could speak German, it would have been an advantage.
Yes.
But then I got a letter from my father who said that a great friend of his, who was a solicitor in Epsom, had offered me a position leading to a partnership, because I had passed the law finals, you see, as a solicitor just before the war started. So I thought, well, perhaps should I do this? Should I go to Germany? Should I become a solicitor in Epsom? So I didn't know what to do. I thought about it a lot. And in the end, I decided, oh, hell, I've been in the army long enough. And so I allowed myself to be demobbed in the ordinary course of the thing, and I became a solicitor.
Did you find it difficult to readjust?
Oh, yes,
to civil life?
Very. It wasn't difficult in civil life, but it was very difficult to pick up the threads of the law. Mm. It was not easy at all. In fact, by the time I actually became demobbed, because it didn't happen immediately, I think several months after this solicitor had offered me a post, he couldn't wait any longer, and he gave the vacancy to someone else instead of to me. So I was without any post whatsoever. So I'm sure you don't want to hear this, but in the end I became a civil servant, and I joined the DPP as a young prosecuting solicitor. And so I was married by this time. Well, that's another story I'm sure you don't want to hear, but I met my wife when I was at Annan, and we became married after the war. After I was demobbed, I mean. And she was a young WAF officer, and so she was eventually demobbed too. And so we had our home, we made our first home in Kew, just beside Kew Gardens, and I had to go off all over England to various places prosecuting people for all kinds of ghastly murders and all the rest of it that the prosecuting service did.
Do you think there are things that you carried with you, things of benefit from having served?
Oh, yes, I do. I certainly do. I think not me only, but everyone's character has been changed and strengthened. I suppose different people had different results. But I think my general character must have been strengthened, but then it had equally been debilitated by my long months of being in hospital and not being able to walk and sort of filling in my... And it was during my period of recuperation that I wrote all the notes that eventually became the subject of this book.
The Perilous Road.
That's right. And so it was because of what I wrote in about 1945 that everything was crystal clear in my mind. So everything that's written in this book is, shall we say, up to date and immediate.